I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. Today's best of show is all about kids and money, starting off with 13-year-old Rishi Vamdutt. We spoke to him when he was just 11 years old, but he continues to be a force of nature in the area of personal finance. He's the creator of Easy Peasy Finance, a YouTube channel and website featuring financial literacy resources that he researches and writes and produces. And I'll speak to the author of My Dad's Class. She is the founder of the Millennial Guru. Her name is Paige Kornatek, and she's going to talk about lessons and activities you can do with your kids to teach them about money and about life. Then a look at kids and digital currency as allowance. It's tempting for parents, right? Because that's the world in which our kids live, but is it the best path? Karen Holland from Gifting Sense is here to share about how to engage kids in thinking before they buy. Plus, a new spin on financial literacy for kids. Hasina Lookman founded ExploreHop. It is an education provider that teaches kids the very basics of handling their money. She'll talk about how it works. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Let's get started. We often talk about teaching kids about money on this show. We talk about financial literacy, blah, blah, blah. But what about talking to kids themselves? What do they think? What do they need? What do they want to hear? Joining me now to talk about his tips for financial literacy for kids is Rishi Vamdutt. He is the creator of Easy Peasy Finance. It's a YouTube channel. It's a website. We've talked to Rishi before, and I'm so glad, Rishi, to have you back on the show. Hello.
Hi, I'm very happy to be back here too, Bruce.
Awesome. Why is financial literacy so important for kids?
So there's a few reasons why it's important for kids to understand finance. One is that personal finance is a key life skill, and it's important because kids, and they'll have to learn it sometime, whether they're an adult or whether they're a kid. And if they learn it as an adult, just like anything else, like biking or skating, it'll be a lot easier if they learn it as a kid compared to as an adult. And so why would you make it harder to yourself and learn it as an adult instead of just learning it as a kid when it's easier? And another reason is that kids can take the advantage of the power of compound interest. So kids, if they start investing early and they learn about personal finance and the importance of investing early, then they'll be able to earn exponentially more money than they would have if they learned about finance as an adult. For example, if someone started investing at 20 and invested $100 a month in the stock market until they were 60, then they would have $700,000. But if they didn't learn about this when they were a kid and they started investing when they were 40, with the same contributions, they'd have only around $70,000, which is a huge difference for just not learning finance as a kid. And another benefit of learning finance as a kid is that you'll be able to distinguish between needs and wants and not make a lot of the mistakes you might have otherwise made. So if you know the difference between your needs and your wants, you won't get into a lot of credit card debt, you won't overspend, you'll know to create a budget. And there's a lot of mistakes that can cost a lot of money if you make them that you'll be able to avoid if you learn about them and how to avoid them as a kid.
I just so happen to have an 11-year-old in my house. My kid is precisely your age. And I think anything that I do, no matter what it is kind of wrong, is kind of old man-like, is kind of tone deaf. What would you say to parents about how to talk about financial literacy in a way that kids will listen?
So I think that something that my parents did for me to kind of help me get interested in finance and when I was just starting to be interested, one thing was that they answered all my questions. They took me seriously and they didn't just they actually did take the time to answer the questions. If they didn't know, then they would search on Google and find the answer, but they took me seriously. And another thing that my parents did was that they involved me in day-to-day financial activities, whether it was going to a cashier at a store and teaching me about credit cards and how they can use that as payment, or going to an ATM and how they can withdraw money from it. They taught me about all of these different things in day-to-day transactions and day-to-day activities that involve personal finance. And those things also really helped me. And another thing my parents did was once I was interested in finance, they also bought lots of resources. So whether it was magazines or books or other things, they got a lot of those resources for me so I could keep on getting more interested in finance. And obviously, at that time, there was no Easy Peasy Finance, but parents today can also use Easy Peasy Finance to help teach their kids about finance.
How do you think about income? I know you're 11, and that will be probably different when you're, you know, 15 or 21 years old or so. But there's a lot to be done on managing expenses, but there's also a lot to be done throughout one's life on managing income. Have you got a job yet?
No, I don't have a job or anything for earning income, but I feel like it's important, like with a budget, to like once you start earning, to create a budget and to be able to see where your money is coming from and where it goes. And so like once you start earning, and also once I start earning, I will create a budget so that I'll be able to manage my money better. I'll be able to see where it's going. I'll be able to save more effectively and invest more effectively. And so that's what I'll do once I do get a job and I do start earning money.
One of the pros and cons of the generation that you're growing up with is your access to digital, to your phones, to social media, to online shopping, to all those sorts of things. That is an advantage. It's also a big disadvantage because you'll have to use more self-control than I did back in the day, you know, before the automobile and electricity were even invented. How do you manage your own personal balance between needs and wants and managing impulses that you might feel to say, ah, I want that. Just press buy and it'll be here by dinner time if we order it on Amazon.
So that is one of the big things that I feel like is difficult for people. And also it's a big disadvantage to like the time that like right now, where there's a constant social media bombardment and advertisement from companies that want you to buy their product. So it's kind of hard to not make impulse purchases, but you kind of like you need to have that self-control and not make those purchases because they can end up costing you a lot of money. And for me, I don't really have a lot of wants in material goods. Like things that I buy, products like sneakers or something like that. I don't have a lot of wants in that. So I feel like that isn't much of a problem for me. But I do spend, and my family and I do save for things like vacations that we get. But I'm not really that tempted by advertising or impulse purchases because I don't really find the need to keep buying material things.
When I talk to you, Rishi, I really feel like I'm talking to myself many decades ago, in that you are smart, you are articulate, you are passionate, and you have an interest in money. I started my own business when I was 13. I was the treasurer on my student council, all these things. But that is not most of your peer group. Most people aren't like you and I. What is it like to be you? And have this passion and have this YouTube channel. What's it like to be you?
So kind of like with my friends and everything, like a lot of my friends, like you said, they aren't as interested in finance as I am or anything, but a lot of them actually do watch my videos on Easy Peasy Finance, and they are all very supportive. So even though they aren't interested in finance the same way I am, that isn't really a problem or anything because they are very supportive of me, and that's really great.
Don't they wish you could have a YouTube channel on like Minecraft or Leap Day or TikTok? I mean, YouTube is kind of like a bit like your parents' social media platform. You should be a TikToker, no?
Well, actually, we do post shorts, so like a short version of our videos, like the first question, and also other things on TikTok and Instagram and all those other places. So we do have a presence there, but like you said, the main thing is on YouTube. And a lot of my friends, I mean, they don't really talk about this. A lot of them do have TikTok and all these other social media sites, and they do post things on them, but they aren't really like talking to me about posting on those things for Easy Peasy Finance. I feel like they also do use YouTube. It's not like they only use TikTok or other things. So I feel like that isn't something that my friends say.
Well, Rishi, we're going to have to keep in touch over the course of the next decade or so as you both grow and expand your media empire and your financial knowledge, and also are exposed to more temptation of, geez, I got to have this or that or whatever it is. I'm going to be fascinated to see your story unfold. Thank you for being here.
I was very happy to be here as well. It's nice to be back with you, Bruce.
Awesome. Rishi Vemdad is the creator of Easy Peasy Finance. He was in New Jersey today, and he's 11, which makes me feel like a super big loser and that I've accomplished nothing because look at him at 11 years old.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Kids, being a parent is a really big trip. And as someone who focuses so much on personal finance, I think a lot about how I am impressing those lessons upon my child. We had a conversation with Paige Coronetit about her book. I can't even remember, it was a while ago. The book is called My Dad's Class, An Intentional Structure for Teaching Your Kids About Money and Life. And we decided to have her back. So Paige has joined us again. We're going to talk about some of the lesson activities. And I love them because they are so, so clear. Paige, welcome back. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you. I so appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Bruce.
So I think we should start by having you kind of frame this in the context of your book, My Dad's Class. What's the essence of that book?
The essence of the book is an intentional structure, how to teach your family and your kids about life and money, because they go hand in hand. It's not just about money.
And where did you get this wisdom yourself?
Well, I grew up with parents who were crystal clear of how they were going to raise us. And my dad did every Saturday a dad's class where we learned about the economy and business and all these different, lessons that he gave to us. And my mom's class was every day, but dad's class was intentionally Saturdays.
Now, surely you went through a gestation in your feelings about these classes. Like, you must have started with, I'm oblivious that every family doesn't do this, to no other family does this, and this is ridiculous and it must stop, to, oh my God, I'm so grateful. This was really helpful. Are those the three phases? Did I characterize them correctly?
Absolutely. I would say from 1 to 18, I was like oblivious, no one else did this. College, I was like, oh, nobody does this. Right. And now that I have my own family in my 30s, I'm like, okay, I'm really grateful for it.
Yeah, let's do this. Okay, so I have linked to one of the teaching guide things that I want to focus on. It's chapter 2, Lay Down the Law. It's about preparing for family laws. What is a family law?
So in my family, we had peace, asking, order, respect, and obedience. Those were our five family laws. And as a child, it was the consequences of if you did something. For example, peace, number one, if you disrupted the peace within yourself and within the family, you needed to go to the repenting bench and kind of have, thoughts about how I disrupted the peace. And it was kind of bigger than yourself. So there was the consequences behind the family laws.
Wow. I thought I grew up in a family with a strong culture. Yours is like 10x mind. It's amazing. So in this outline, you've got goals, you've got essential questions on the laws, you've got some videos, and then you've got, it's called Let's Talk. What's the conversation that you're trying to catalyze on that topic in particular?
Well, I think for the parents to come together first and the spouses to have those sort of conversations, and obviously age appropriate with the children, but really, I think the ultimate thing that my family did was having us sit down and have these conversations and explain to us, well, whether we were five, whether we were seven, whether we were 17, what that word meant and what these laws meant and how it could help us in our life and as kind of the ecostructure of the family.
And so you've got Let's Watch, Let's Talk, Let's Do. What's an example of the doing that kids would take on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so with peace, we'll go back to peace again, the repenting bench, something that you would do is you would sit on this hard spot and repent with the sibling that you hit or whatever happened, and then you would have to come together to talk to the parent and explain your side. So no matter what, even if you were the one hitting or being hit, you were still a part of the problem. And so realizing, you know, your actions have consequences within it. And so it's doing the consequences and understanding and the repetition behind it too.
The other lesson, this is chapter one, create out loud family sayings. So what was your, I'm ready to roll my eyes. I'm going to love what you say. I'm going to roll my eyes. This is in the very same facial expression. What was an out loud family saying when you were growing up?
Number one was, I can do it.
Wow. Mine would have been, life's not fair. That would have been mine. That would have been mine, but different. Okay. All right. And so in this teaching guide, you've got, again, let's watch, let's talk. What are the, what's the conversation with kids about that?
Well, again, age appropriate, right? So if you're going through your family sayings like, I can do it, do what's right, do your best, we would pretend that we were superstars and put our hands in the air and jump up and down and say, I can do it, and scream it from the mountaintops to really help emphasize it within our body and within our mouths.
And the specific, the real actionable part of this chapter is around routines. And I want to draw a very emphatic link here between routines and personal finance, because so much of what we're trying to teach our kids is just habits. Having good habits like brushing your teeth, they will serve you for a lifetime. So what are some routines that you would recommend families take on that would make a difference when it comes to money?
I would say the number one thing that my family did was family bank. And that was every Saturday, our family bank opened and we earned money from however old we were. So if I was seven, I earned $7. And then you were able to put it in the family bank and ledger it and understand, okay, this is consistent weekly. We're doing a family bank and our bank opens and we can have conversations around it. And this was up until I left the house when I was 18. Wow.
What role did guilt or judgment play in this? You smiled immediately when I said that. I ask because it's families, but also religions and geographic cultures, like all different layers of culture, have different dynamics around these sorts of things. Were your parents able to keep it pure, or would they, you know, give you the stink eye if you withdrew money from the family bank and went and blew it at the casino?
I think it depended on which parent, honestly. Oh.
So, okay, I love to hear they're not perfect. So who was right? The higher guilt-oriented person? I have a hypothesis.
I would say, she's not going to like me saying this, but my mother was more of the guilt, like, are you sure you want to buy those $100 jeans?
Jeans, but you know, there are children dying in Africa. So, right, you know, just as you buy those $100 jeans.
Exactly. So there was a lot of questions of like the underlying tone being like, are you sure? Think about it. But overall, my parents did a good job at letting us as kids handle the money and make those mistakes and have those conversations. And maybe they weren't even mistakes to us. So, you know, $100 jeans that maybe I still have, probably don't fit into them, but.
My kid is 13. And certainly if I reflect on the choices that I have made as a parent, there are some things I would 1000% do exactly the same. Some one or two things that I might do differently. Have you ever asked your parents, as it related to these classes and in particular around personal finance, what they might do differently if they had a do-over?
That's a great question. And I have never, and I'm going to call them after talking to you. What would you have done differently? Especially because I just became a parent. So I would love to hear, you know, how would you do it differently? Or if you would, what would you do differently?
Yeah. Cause I think part of the reason my family culture was so strong was because there were five kids. And if you didn't, you had two choices. You either chose a chaotic household or a household with laws and routines and structure, or the parents would lose their ever loving minds.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
What is the one thing? Now your kid is young. Yes.
She is 5 months.
Five. Six. That is young. That is young. So are you already like when you, you know, cuckoo into her ear and sing her a little lullaby, does it have lyrics that relate to retirement savings? Are you starting that early?
No. How did you know? We say, money, save money, spend money. Daily, weekly,
Is there anything that you think you will not reapply?
I would say there was a very my dad was strict, and I would say that I won't be as strict as it. I will be firm but kind. I think kindness is important with it, but I will not be as firm as he was.
Yes, said with love. Well, yes. Very helpful. I love that we had a chance to get into these lessons. Paige, thank you for joining us again today.
Thank you so much, Bruce.
Paige Coronetit, and the book is My Dad's Class, An Intentional Structure for Teaching Your Kids About Money and Life. And these lessons that we've talked about are available online. Paige, where are they available online? Because I see I've got a link here. Where are they? Where can people find them?
SpendThen.com, THEN, SpendThen.com.
SpendThen.com. Okay, that's where you will find them. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hi, it's me, your dad. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up next on Moolala's Best Of, we're focused today on kids and money, and we're going to look more specifically at the world of digital currency. How can you make sure your kids think before they buy when they're not dealing with physical coins and paper currency, but rather the digital equivalent on Robux? Karen Holland from Gifting Sense has some tips. And later, what you need to know before, ideally before, you help your adult kids financially. Licensed insolvency trustee Doug Hoyce will share some of his cautionary tales. To stay up to date with all things Moolala, we have a very, very simple newsletter. It goes out once a month. To sign up, you can go to moolala.ca, plug in your email address, and we promise we will never do anything other than send you a newsletter.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Welcome back. Moolala, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. If you have young people in your life, you have likely heard of something called Roblox. It's an online gaming platform that many kids are spending a lot of their time on. This platform, it does a bunch of things, but one of the things, it lets you buy Robux, which is a digital currency that allows you to make in-game purchases. Now, parents, many of them are left wondering whether they should give their kids a traditional cash allowance like we've done for decades, or pay in virtual currency instead. If you choose the latter, how do you make sure your kids are still learning the value of money? Karen Holland has some opinions on this topic. She is the founder of Gifting Sense, an organization that teaches children how to think before they buy. She's in New York City. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce.
There was this article in the Wall Street Journal. What was the essence of the article?
Well, the article's original headline was that kids don't want money anymore. Now, of course, this caught my attention because that's not at all what I observe. And I've been volunteer teaching kids how to think before they buy for over 7 years now. So I immediately wrote to Sarah Needleman, who is the article's author, and to her credit and the Wall Street Journal's credit, by about 2 o'clock that afternoon, they changed the headline to a much more representative, kids don't want cash anymore.
Right.
So the good news is there's something to the whole see something, say something adage. You know, I saw something that struck me as super misleading. I said something in a very respectful way, and the author responded. So to me, this is society working.
What did you take away from both the article and from what you see with young people in terms of this trend towards virtual currency?
Well, more representative headline aside, the content of the piece is still troubling because what it really gives voice to is that children are savvy enough, school-age children are savvy enough to request their allowance in a form that allows for spending in the easiest way possible. And I'm sorry to say, you know, ease for parents aside, this really is not helpful to the kids or the parents in the long run.
Why?
Because I understand that parents might be thinking to themselves, okay, online banking and digital payment systems, they're the way of the world. That's observable. What is also observable, and I, you know, I'm in a position to observe this quite closely, is that school-age children very often, you know, I'll say most of the time, have no idea how much money is actually required to make a purchase, nor how much they're likely to use or appreciate an item or experience before they buy it. And in-game purchases of virtual merchandise worsens this dynamic, does not improve it in any way, shape, or form.
And certainly this is consistent with what all the literature says about using a credit card versus paying for with cash. A credit card anesthetizes the pain, I'm sure, in much the same way as spending a virtual currency does.
Well, you know, exactly, Bruce. Spending is so frictionless today. You know, when you and I were growing up, if we went into a store and something was $10 and we had $5, we went home empty-handed because you couldn't text your mom. She couldn't Venmo you. You couldn't use Apple Pay. Like there was none of this, right?
Shoplifting was frowned upon.
Shoplifting was frowned upon. And what's happening is children are really confusing payment methods, how you pay for something with how they're funded, which is by working at a job to earn wages. You know, I often ask kids, where does money come from? And depending upon their age and stage, we get some, you know, really fantastical answers. Now, the point of that question is to guide them back to the correct response, which, because they're not yet adult income earners, is that money comes from their parents working hard to earn it. And then we continue. But, you know, if you look at Robux, okay, it's an in-game currency purchased at a steep discount to the face value. So what I mean here is that for, say, example, 30 actual dollars, you can purchase something like $2,400 worth of Robux. So, you know, this only serves to exacerbate this illusion of a magical world where, you know, it's just not that hard to spend less than you make.
You are grounded in reality, that it characterizes your work. And the reality is kids want to be able to buy in this way and spend their, even if their allowance is delivered on a piece of paper in a $5 bill, they may want to convert that into Robux. How do you do that in the best possible way, knowing that this is how kids sometimes want to spend their money?
Okay, I know it takes more time, but it doesn't take that much time. And all parents that I come across want to help their children develop productive money personalities. The technical description is money scripts. Exploring Vlad Klontz's work on money scripts is super worthwhile, but I call them money personalities just to make it more accessible for parents and kids. So in order to do that, they really need to create circumstances under which spending in-game currency is only a side dish to earning and spending allowance versus the main course.
Does that mean that a kid should be encouraged to spend some of their physical allowance at the 7-Eleven?
Well, I mean, I always prefer spending actual dollars on actual stuff because I just think that the way to get better at real life is to practice real life. I know, though, that kids want Robux. I had a girl in workshop yesterday who shared that she received a stuffed unicorn for her birthday and she'd really wanted Robux. So if you're going to give them Robux, there needs to be a conversation exploring the difference between the purchasing power of actual dollars and the purchasing power of these in-game currencies, and how that difference is actually magnified by the fact that in-game accessory prices also have no reality on planet Earth. When you think about the family highlighted in that article, they had 10 and 12 year old daughters who purchased, I think it was a Gucci jacket and a Louis Vuitton purse for their avatars for something like 5 Robux. So of course, you know, that's not real life, right? I mean, a Louis Vuitton purse in real life, not even a fancy one, costs $2,000, which for most of today's school-age children represents their entire take-home pay for 1 month when they first become adult income.
So what you're pointing to is there's two layers here. One is the distortion of what a Gucci product costs on Roblox versus in the real world. And second, the disconnect between the piece of paper that someone earned by shoveling a driveway and the way that that money is spent online. Is that an accurate characterization?
Yes, we need to work hard to make things as tangible for kids as possible. I think one of the reasons that parents struggle with, well, you know, how bad really is it? One of the parents in the article says, well, what's the difference between letting him buy a skin for his avatar in Fortnite and a toy? You know, the thing is, toys break. I mean, you can become dissatisfied with a skin. But again, it's just, to me, it's not really, I guess at a minimum, let's not call it helping them get better with money. Let's just call it giving them a toy then. Right. This idea that, you know, they're saying that making these in-game purchases is a way to develop any sort of financial skill, I just don't buy it.
Karen, just before we go here, where we originally connected was on your DIMS score. Tell people where they can find it and the essence of how it works.
Okay, well, they can find everything they need to know at giftingsense.org. There's a teacher tab where we've given teachers everywhere everything they need to conduct their own workshop on thinking before buying for their own students in their own classroom. Parents, though, are also fully capable of teaching their kids how to think before they buy. I'm forever telling parents, not only dentists teach their kids to brush their teeth. And all they have to do is go to the website and click on Get Your DIMS Score Now. DIMS stands for Does It Make Sense Score. It's a number between 1 and 10 that's automatically generated when kids answer questions on a digital worksheet about a possible purchase. And it helps them understand, A, how much money is actually required to make the purchase, and B, how much they're likely to really use or appreciate an item or experience before they buy it. What we observe every week is that when we give kids a tool that lets them quickly, but not arbitrarily, assess how much money's involved and whether or not they'll use or appreciate something, guess what? They make really good decisions.
What?
But they need the tool. Yes, they do. They stop themselves. You know, February's coming. You watch. We're going to be calculating the DIM score for Super Bowl tickets until the cows come home.
Oh,
halfway through, they want to stop. Because the minute they understand that this is a thousands of dollar exercise going to the Super Bowl, they already know it doesn't make sense, but they needed those questions to be asked and answered to come to that determination.
Genius. Karen, thank you for joining us today.
My absolute pleasure, Bruce. Keep up the good work.
Karen Holland's the founder of Gifting Sense at giftingsense.org. And she was here to talk about some of the dynamics that are so hard for parents to navigate these days, including Roblox and Robux, digital currencies, in-game purchases. Coming up later on our Best of Kids and Money show, what to do when your adult kids ask you for money. I mean, kids do it from like the time they can talk, but the stakes are a lot higher when they're in their late teens, when they're early 20s, and maybe if they want to help you or ask for your help to get into the housing market. Licensed insolvency trustee Doug Hoyes has some insight onto how to navigate these situations. But first, Hasina Lookman, creator of Explore Hop, tells us how this new platform works. It's all about teaching kids about financial literacy. If you have missed an episode of Moolah La, you can head on over to moolahla.ca. And given that today we're talking about kids and money, there are so many more conversations that we have had over the course of our, 200 and something episodes. So if you just type in the word kids, you're going to find lots and lots of interviews on lots and lots of topics that you can listen to at your leisure.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
We have talked about financial literacy for kids 8,434 times on this program. The apps, the books, the courses, the methods, and we will probably talk about it 8,434 more times because it is so important. Asena Lookman left the corporate world to create Explorer Hop, which is an education provider that teaches kids about financial literacy, help them to prepare for the future, right? Asena joins me now to talk more about Explorer Hop and about some of the courses and educational offerings that they have. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce. How are you?
I mentioned that I have talked about financial literacy for kids 8,434 times. I'm only half kidding here. How is Explore Hop different from the conversations I have had so many times on this program?
So Explore Hop is different because we are basically the learning destination for financial literacy and entrepreneurship for kids, youth, and I would say even for adults. We're very much at the forefront in the financial literacy space around the world. And we're different from others because we actually give kids the tools to make the choices so that they learn for themselves. We've invested heavily in tech simply to provide that immersive experience to kids.
What would that look like for a kid? As a parent of a 12-year-old, she rolls her eyes anytime I talk about financial literacy because she knows it's what I do for a living. What have you learned to put it into their world? Is it Harry Potter references and TikTok videos?
Oh, God, no, no. We win the game of gaming. We win the root of gaming. So
Minecraft.
I have a 14-year-old. And this company was actually launched by her when she was 10, 11. So it's very much started from the perspective of a child. And when we were developing programs, my daughter was very much involved in the way these programs rolled out. So the end product is we actually went down the route of saying, how do we create that gaming experience in money? And let's take, for example, the case of your daughter who's 12 years old. At 12 years old, they understand credit cards. They've got apps they buy online. She's got a phone for sure, right?
Yep.
And so they understand how to spend money. They also hear people talking about GameStop. They hear these things. They hear Bitcoin. What we do is we take that curiosity and we give them a platform where they can trade, right? So we went out and we got a proprietary feed from Wall Street. And so we have one of the fastest feeds than anyone I know. It's faster than my feed at TD. So that's what we did. And we kids get a virtual portfolio of anything between 10,000 to 30,000 bucks. And we teach them how to trade. And it's fun for them because it's real time. Things are moving. You know, something happens around the world that they've heard of, things are moving. Their newest store comes out with a new pair of shoes or whatever. Stock market changes. They're beginning to see things real time. They're making connections between what they hear and what they see and how it impacts their virtual portfolio.
I'm interested to hear more about how you determine what courses to offer. Some, like Camp Millionaire, I get it, okay, got it, personal finance, day trading, yep, all that makes sense. The one that caught my eye, though, Bitcoin and blockchain. Tell me about that.
So we have had consistently every child, when they join Camp Millionaire, on day one, they want to do crypto trading. Wow. That is the buzzword. It is crypto. They don't have a clue what is crypto, but they want to do crypto. And I realized we could either teach them what is crypto, how crypto works, the goods and bads and ins and outs of crypto. And this way, they could make decisions for themselves. Because as you know, you can no longer tell a 12 to 14 year old what to do. They have to figure it out. You just create a path for them. And so we launched the Bitcoin and blockchain course. And as you can imagine, it is the most popular course. And they actually learn how the whole Bitcoin world works. What is interesting is that a lot of these kids who are trading, and we have a large percentage of kids who trade, they are already in crypto. So, you know, Dogecoins, all these other little coins, they already know about them. They're in them way before the rest of the world is really getting excited about them. So it helps for them to know what they're getting into. It also helps them to be to simulate it. When we have this platform, so a platform that I mentioned that we built, it's not just about stocks and mutual funds and you know, things. It also does Bitcoin. It does options, because a lot of these kids get into options. It's got all these things that they can actually trade real time in the virtual world and see for themselves and learn before they go out and spend the money that they've got for Christmas or anything else.
Tell me about the competitions. You've got a global investment challenge. There's an entrepreneurship festival, a math hackathon. How do those work?
So all our festivals are global, and we literally get kids from across the world. With the math hackathon, we had kids from 10 different countries participating. They are given a real world challenge. This year, we told them the challenge they had was using math to save the vaccine, to solve the vaccine delivery method. And we had a team that came out from Mark Garneau High School in Toronto that actually won, and they used math to say this is how the world should, you know, distribute vaccines so that everybody has a shot at being vaccinated. With the Global Investment Challenge, this is something we've now got for the third time in running. We run it every 6 months. It's again a global initiative. It's limited to 100 kids. And we've had kids everywhere from Australia to South America to France, everywhere. And these kids get a virtual portfolio of $30,000 that they invest in. The first time we did it, we had a young girl called Veronica, who's now 14 years old. And she took the $30,000 and brought it up to almost $90 million.
Wow.
It's insane. It's insane.
We've only got 30 seconds to go. Many of these services out there are offered by banks. They are offered by nonprofits. They are offered by fintech entrepreneurs. And there's different ways for those entrepreneurs to monetize this. What should parents expect? I mean, I see that they pay for the courses. How else do you make your money?
That's it.
Pay for your courses. Simple.
Simple. Pay for the courses and let's train all these kids so they go ahead and they become more successful.
Very simple. Hasina, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me today, Bruce.
Hasina Luqman is the founder of Explore Hop. You got to check it out. There is tons of great material out there for kids. And boy, I can understand from firsthand experience how important the gamification of all of this is. Coming up next on the Best of Kids and Money episode, licensed insolvency trustee Doug Hoyes is going to be here. He's going to talk about what you need to know before you succumb to your child's request to help them out financially. I am also the money columnist on CBC Radio. So Wednesday afternoons, we are going to focus on topics that are very relevant to you, very relevant to your financial life. That's Wednesday afternoons on CBC Radio on The Drive Home Show. So we could meet there too.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
It begins the very first time you take your young child to the grocery store. I want that. No. We are not buying the that or the this or the other thing. And as the years go on, the requests get bigger and bigger and bigger, and the reasons behind the no become, you know, a little more nuanced. For adult children in today's real estate market, there is an increase in the requests for help on down payments. No surprise, right? But whether it's to help them, you know, pay their rent or to save for a down payment for their first home, you might be putting yourself in a tough financial situation if you say yes. So how do you navigate this this part of the family dynamic, family and financial dynamic? Doug Hoyes is a licensed insolvency trustee with Hoyes Michaelis, and he joins us now to talk about some of the pros and cons and strategies to doing it right. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Bruce.
You have seen this go sideways, and I think that's why I wanted to talk to you about it in particular. What has happened? What have you seen?
Well, the classic example would be what you described. My adult kid comes to me and says, hey, I need some help. Maybe it's help paying the rent. Maybe it's help paying a down payment, whatever. So I say, okay, you know what? Once a parent, always a parent. I'm going to help you out. So here's some money. And if I've got the money sitting there in a savings account, I've got tons of money and I don't really need it, fine, give it to the kid, no problem. Where it goes sideways is, number one, where I as a parent borrow money to help my kid in the hopes that, well, they're going to pay it back, so it's no big deal. Well, if they can't pay it back, I've now taken on debt. I've now got debt payments every month. I've still got my own payments to make. And if I'm a parent of an adult child, that probably means I'm over the age of 20. I might be 40, 50, 60. I might be retired. I might be living on a pension. I might have a fixed income. And so when you throw a new debt payment on top of that, that can be the recipe for a disaster.
And by the time they're walking into your office, things are can be pretty dire, right? It's not just, oops, I need to cut back on Uber Eats for a week or two, and then all that'll get me back on track. If they're coming to see you, how would you describe their financial situation?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's dire. Like, I'm the last person you call, not the first person you call, right? If my kid can't pay me back the money I lent them, well, I'm probably going to talk to my bank about getting another loan, maybe getting an extension. I may talk to other family members, other kids I've got who maybe can help me out. If none of that works, then they come and see me. And in most cases, it's because they are now missing payments on that debt payment they took over to help their kid. So it's a very dire situation because you're faced with the problem, do I pay my rent and buy groceries or do I pay the bank for this bank loan? What do I do? It's a very difficult situation.
I'm going to ask you to oversimplify because I can imagine people get into this situation where they're calling you for two reasons. One, they never should have done it in the first place. They're just living too close to the edge and it was a bad idea. And two, something material changed. So, you know, you'd say, okay, they've got the cash flow, they can do this. And then, whoa, something changed, a job loss, a divorce, or something like that. What percentage would be in each of those two categories? Would it be 80%? Listen, you did not do the math. Or is it 80% circumstances threw them for a loop?
Yeah, I think probably it's more the first one that you probably shouldn't have done this in the first place. And then it gets compounded by the additional problems. But there would certainly be some people in both categories. They shouldn't have done it. And then things got worse. And it may be that they were pretty close to the edge at the start. And then, I don't know, something crazy happens. Like we have a lockdown because of some virus or something.
That would never happen. I don't even know what you're talking about.
If something like that was to happen, an unanticipated event, it throws you off. So if you are the parent and you are faced with this decision, number one, you better start looking ahead. Okay, what could possibly go wrong? Is there a chance that I'll be able to service this on my own or not? Because you cannot rely on your kid to be paying you back because they might not be able to pay you back. So if they can't pay you back, what kind of situation is that going to put yourself in? That's the first question I'd be asking myself.
Yeah. And the other dynamic indirectly would be co-signing on debt. So you may take the loan out as the parent and pass that on in the form of a gift to the kid. That's one way. You could also co-sign. Big, flashing red light of caution on that. Tell us more about how someone should think about that.
I mean, that co-signing is giving them all the money. So we think of co-signing as, yeah, okay, no problem here. I'll sign the piece of paper. I don't have to fork out any cash. It's no big deal. Yeah, no. Co-signing means you are 100% liable for that debt. So if you co-sign on your kid's mortgage and there's a housing crash, they lose their home, whatever, you're responsible for the whole thing. You co-sign for their car loan and they can't pay it, the car gets repossessed, you're on the hook for the whole thing. So don't think of it as co-signing, which of course is what it is. Think of it as I am giving them all of the money that I am signing for. Am I able to service that debt if they can't pay it? If not, you want to avoid co-signing at all costs.
Yeah. Doug, thank you for being pleasant.
Happy to be with you, Bruce.
Doug Hoyes is with Hoyes Michaelis. They're licensed insolvency trustees. And just the point that I'd say that I'd pick up on from Doug, there are options out there. There are solutions. Our system has been designed to give people a fresh start. It is a painful call to make, but there are options out there. Whew. So much insight, so much for our kids to learn and grow as it relates to their money over a course of time. That is it for this Best Of show. Thank you to our sponsor, Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. And a note, if you'd like to get in touch with us, it's very simple to do. Our email address is ask@moolala.ca. ask@moolala.ca. Send us a note on social media. I am at Bruce Sellery on Twitter. That is spelled S-E-L-L-E-R-Y, like the vegetable, but with an S to us. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.